Hi, my name's Tamara, and tonight I'll be sharing a famous story about a girl from a faraway world, a place where flowers bloom under miles of sea, a place of mermaids and magic. Before we begin, I invite you to close your eyes gently and take a moment to deepen the flow of your breath. Feel the length of your body begin to relax as you sink into the comfort of your warm bed. And now that you're all settled in, join me for a journey far below the tides as we begin tonight's sleep story, The Little Mermaid. Far out in the depths of the ocean, where the water is as blue as sapphire and as clear as crystal, it is so deep indeed, that many church steeples, piled one upon another, would not reach from the ground beneath to the surface of the water above. There dwells the Sea King in his merry, peaceful kingdom. We must not imagine that there is nothing at the bottom of the sea but bare yellow sand. No, for from this sand grows the most exotic flowers and plants, the leaves and stems of which are so flexible that the slightest stir of the water causes them to dance to the rhythm of the sea. Fishes, both large and small, glide between the branches, just as birds fly among the trees here upon land. In the deepest spot of all stands the castle of the Sea King. Its walls are built of colorful coral, and the long Gothic windows are of the clearest amber. The roof is formed of shells that open and close as the water flows over them, making the palace even more beautiful with the glittering pearls within them, each one round and shining, fit for a queen. The Sea King had lost his beloved queen many years ago and had raised each of his 6 daughters all on his own. He was deserving of very great praise for his care of the little sea princesses. They were kind, intelligent children, and the youngest was the most creative of them all. She was most interested in exploration and often swam much farther from the castle than most any of the merfolk had dared to swim. Like all the others, she had no legs, and her body ended in a majestic fish's tail, upon which hung 8 gleaming pearls. All day long, the princesses kept quite a schedule in the great halls of the castle. The large amber windows were open, and the fish swam in and out, just as the swallows fly into our houses when we open the windows. Only the fishes swam up to the princesses, 8 out of their hands, and brushed their shoulders with affectionate little nudges. Outside the castle, there was a beautiful garden in which grew bright red and dark blue sea flowers. The fruit glittered like gold, and the leaves and stems waved to and fro. The earth itself was the finest sand, but blue as the afternoon sky. Over everything lay a peculiar radiance, as if the azure sky was everywhere, above and below. In calm weather, the sun could be seen, looking like a reddish-purple flower, with light streaming from the heavens. Each of the young princesses had a plot of land where she might dig and plant and build as she pleased. One arranged an orchestra where fish and squid and sponges alike could come and play their brilliant music of the seas. Another preferred to plant a variety of vegetables to make sure their dear father, the Sea King, could have the healthiest of diets. While the youngest child made something of a library or museum where she carefully cataloged and stored all the human items she could find, especially their delicate, intricate books. She was always a unique child, quiet and thoughtful. While her sisters showed delight at the wonderful things around them in the ocean, she herself only cared about the human things she obtained from the wrecks of vessels. Her prized possession was the representation of a handsome boy carved out of pure white stone, which had fallen to the bottom of the sea. She planted by the statue a rose-colored sea fan. It grew rapidly and soon hung its fresh branches over the statue, almost down to the blue sands. Nothing gave the little mermaid so much pleasure as to hear about the world above the sea. She was always asking her father to tell her all he knew of the ships and of the towns, the people, and the animals. To her, it seemed most wonderful and beautiful to hear that the flowers of the land had fragrance, while those below the sea had none. That the trees of the forest were green, and that the fishes among the trees could sing so sweetly that it was a pleasure to hear them. You see, her father called the birds fishes, or the little mermaid would not have understood what was meant, for she had never seen birds. "When you have reached your 18th year," said the king, "I will be very proud to grant you permission to rise up out of the sea and sit on the rocks in the moonlight while the great ships go sailing by. There you will see both forests and towns." In the following year, her older mer-sister would be 18. But as each was a year younger than the other, the youngest would have to wait several years before her turn came to rise up from the bottom of the ocean to see the earth as we do. However, each sister promised to tell the others what she saw on her first visit and what she thought was most fascinating. But none of the other princesses longed as much for her turn as the youngest. She who had the longest time to wait. Many nights she floated by the open window, looking up through the navy blue water. She could see the moon and stars shining faintly. But through the waves, they looked larger than they do to our eyes. When something like a black cloud passed between her and them, she knew that it was either a whale swimming over her head or a ship full of human beings who never imagined that a pretty little mermaid was swimming just beneath them, holding out her curious hands towards the keel of their ship. At length, the eldest was 18 and was allowed to rise to the surface of the ocean. The little mermaid stayed right by her sister's room and didn't move an inch until she came back. When the eldest princess returned, she had hundreds of wonderful things to talk about. But the finest thing she said was to lie on a sandbank in the quiet moonlit sea near the shore, gazing at the lights of the nearby town that twinkled like hundreds of stars, and listening to the sounds of human music, the noise of carriages, and the merry pealing of the bells in the church steeples. The little princess listened rapt with attention to every word her sister said. In another year, the second sister received permission to rise to the surface of the water and to swim about where she pleased. She floated to the surface just as the sun was setting. And this, she said, was the most beautiful sight of all. The whole sky looked like gold and violet, as rose-colored clouds, which she could not adequately describe, drifted across it. And even more swiftly than the clouds flew a large flock of wild swans toward the setting sun, like a long white veil across the sea. The third sister's turn followed, and she was the boldest of them all, for she swam up a broad river that flowed into the sea. On the banks, she saw green hills covered with beautiful vines, and houses and schools peeping out from amid the proud trees of the forest. She heard birds singing and felt the rays of the sun so warmly that she was obliged often to dive under the water to cool herself. In a narrow creek, she found a large group of little children splashing about in the water. And then a little black animal strayed from the children, came to visit the princess, and licked her face and jumped upon her like she was the most wonderful person in the world. It was a puppy, but she did not know it, for she had never seen one before. She said she should never forget the sprawling cities, the rolling hills, and the children who could swim in the water, although they had no tails. The fourth sister was more timid. She remained in the midst of the sea, but said it was quite as beautiful there as nearer the land. She could see many miles around her, and the sky above looked like a bell of glass. She had seen the ships, but at such a great distance that they looked like seagulls. The dolphins splashed in the waves, and the great whales spouted water from their blowholes, till it seemed as if 100 fountains were playing in every direction. The fifth sister's birthday occurred in the winter, so when her turn came, she saw a world the others had not seen. The sea looked quite green, dark as an emerald, and large icebergs were floating about, each like a giant gemstone, but larger and loftier than the churches built by men. They were of the most singular shapes and glittered like diamonds in the dark night. She had seated herself on one of the largest and let the wind play with her long hair. Each of the sisters, when first she had permission to rise to the surface, was delighted with the new and beautiful sights. But now that they were grown-up girls and could go where they pleased, they had become quite indifferent about it. They soon wished themselves back again, and after a month had passed, they said it was much more beautiful down below and more familiar to be at home. Yet often in the evening hours, the five sisters would twine their arms about each other and rise to the surface together. Their voices were more charming than that of any human being, and before the approach of a storm, when they wondered that a ship might be lost, they swam before the vessel, singing enchanting songs of the delights to be found in the depths of the sea. But the sailors could not understand the song and thought it was the singing of the ocean. When the sisters rose, arm in arm through the water, their youngest sister would swim quite alone, looking after them, hoping for happy endings. At last, on the day of her 18th year, she was ready to go to the surface. "I know that I shall love the world up there," she mused, "and all the people who live in it." "Well, now that you are grown up," said the king, "come and let me adorn you like your sisters." And he placed in her hair a wreath of white lilies, of which every flower leaf was half a pearl. Then the king asked 8 great pearls to attach themselves to the tail of the princess to show her high rank. She would have gladly shaken off all this grandeur, for the red flowers in her own garden would have suited her just as well. But she was grateful for the token of her father's love, and she said farewell and rose as lightly as a bubble to the surface of the water. The sun had just set when she raised her head above the waves. The clouds were tinted with crimson and gold, and through the glimmering twilight beamed the evening star in all its beauty. The sea was calm, and the air mild and fresh. A large ship with 3 masts lay becalmed on the water. Only 1 sail was set, for not a breeze stirred, and the sailors sat idle on deck. There was music and song on board, and as darkness came on, 100 colored lanterns were lighted as if the flags of all nations waved in the air. The little mermaid now swam close to the cabin windows, and now and then, as the waves lifted her up, she could look in through the ship's portals and see a number of wonderful people dancing. Among them, and the most beautiful of all, was a young prince with large black eyes. He was 20 years of age, and his birthday was being celebrated with great display. The sailors were dancing on deck, and when the prince came out of the cabin, more than 100 flowers flashed in the air, making it as bright as day. The little mermaid was so enraptured that she dived back just under the water to take in the spectacle. And when she peeked out again, it looked as if all the stars of heaven were falling around her. She had never seen such fireworks before. Great suns spurted fire about. Splendid fireflies flew into the blue air, and everything was reflected in the clear, calm sea beneath. The ship itself was so brightly illuminated that all the people and decorations could be distinctly seen. How handsome the young prince looked as he pressed the hands of all his guests and smiled at them, while the music resounded through the clear night air. Although it was very late in the night now, the music was still festive and jolly, and the revelers were still dancing and laughing and singing. The princess remained by the cabin window, rocking up and down on the waves so that she could look within. Suddenly she noticed something that sent her heart aflutter in her chest. The dreamy young prince seemed to be escaping his own party. He was alone inside a small rowboat, the kind that's usually attached to a large ship, to get to and from the shore. And the rowboat was attached to a long rope tied to the ship. The prince paddled until the rowboat was as far from the ship as the rope would allow. Then, the Little Mermaid princess witnessed a sight that simply filled her heart. The young prince, having had his fill of the lively party, took out a book, lay back on a cushion, and began to read under the stars. The Little Mermaid almost burst out laughing, for now she could see that she and the young prince had much in common. By and by, as the princess also swayed to the music, her own eyelids began to get heavy, and she felt herself dozing off, sinking down to her beckoning home. But she wanted to make sure the prince would not be in danger, for she understood that the humans did not possess the same skills in the water as the merfolk, and they were vulnerable indeed. So she kept careful watch on the prince, and it was a good thing she did, because momentarily she saw the rope connecting the rowboat to the ship come undone. She waited for the prince to steer the boat back, but she soon realized he was so enraptured in his book that he didn't notice a thing. He didn't realize he was drifting further and further away from the ship. The mermaid tried to splish and splash to get the prince's attention, but his nose was so far in his book, he was completely enveloped in the land of the imaginary. And as the prince turned page after page, he began to yawn greater and wider. It wasn't long before he fell into a deep slumber, his book draped open across his chest. So the princess had no choice but to swim along after him. And she followed the prince in his little rowboat as it drifted out into the expanse of sea. Luckily for the prince, the Little Mermaid was guiding his rowboat, lest he drift out into the open water. She danced her tail this way and that, making little currents that pushed and pulled the boat toward safe shores. There was a lovely island nearby, and that was the only land for leagues and leagues. So the little princess knew that she must take him there if he had any chance of returning to his friends. Soon they came in sight of land, and the Little Mermaid looked upon lofty blue mountains on which the white snow rested. Beautiful verdant forests grew near the shore. Orange trees grew in rows, and lofty palms grazed the sky. The sea here formed a little bay in which the water lay quiet and still, but very deep. So she steered him right up on the sandy banks of the island that was covered with a fine white sand. And she pushed the boat gently into the warm sunshine. The sun came up red and shining out of the water. Melodic bells sounded from a large white building. And the prince finally looked around. He seemed to look right at the little princess, and they made eye contact for one brief moment. Quickly, the mermaid dove below the surface to hide herself, for she was not supposed to be seen by people. Now some young girls came into the garden, and the little mermaid swam out further from the shore and hid herself among some high rocks that rose out of the water, covering her head and neck with the foam of the sea. She watched to see what would become of the lovely prince. By now, he'd realized he was no longer near his ship, and he looked about in confusion. But instead of trying to find his way home, he kept staring longingly out into the ocean, searching and searching for some magic mystery he swore he had seen. The little mermaid princess herself. It was not long before the mermaid saw a young girl approach the spot where the prince was resting. She seemed concerned at first, but only for a moment. Then she brought a number of people, and the mermaid saw that they attended to the prince, giving him food and water. Eventually, the group led the prince away from the beach, and they walked away out of view so that the little mermaid could no longer see him. And so, she dived down into the water and returned to her father's castle. She had always been quiet and thoughtful, and now she was more so than ever. Her sisters asked what she had seen during her first visit to the surface, but she could tell them nothing. Many an evening and morning did she rise to the place where she had left the prince. She saw the fruits in the garden ripen and watched them gathered. She watched the snow on the mountaintops melt away, but never did she catch a glimpse of the prince. And therefore, she always returned home more curious than before. It was her only comfort to sit in her own little garden and gaze upon this stately marble statue of a human man who seemed so much like the long-lost prince. She gave up tending to her sea flowers, and they grew into shaggy bushes over the paths, twining their long leaves and stems round the branches of the trees so that the whole place became wild. At length, she told one of her sisters all about it. Then the others heard the secret, and very soon it became known to several mermaids. The princess also told them about the wonderful party on board the ship, and she told them where the prince came from and where his palace stood. "Come, little sister," said the other princesses. Then they entwined their arms and rose together to the surface of the water, near the spot where they knew the prince's palace stood. It was built of bright yellow, shining stone, and had long flights of marble steps, one of which reached quite down to the sea. Through the clear, lofty windows could be seen noble rooms with precious silk curtains and walls covered with beautiful paintings. In the center of the largest salon, a fountain sprayed its sparkling jets high up into the glass cupola of the ceiling, through which the sun shone down upon the water. Now that the little mermaid knew where the prince lived, she spent many an evening and many a night on the water near the palace. She would swim much nearer to the shore than any of the others had ventured. And once she went up the narrow channel under the marble balcony, which threw a broad shadow on the water. It was there that she would see the young prince, who thought himself alone in the bright moonlight, looking, always looking, out into the ocean. She often saw him evenings, sailing in a beautiful boat on which music sounded and flags waved, always looking out into the sea, searching for something. I wonder what he is looking at out there in the sea, wondered the little mermaid. Many a night, too, when the fishermen set their nets by the light of their torches, she heard them relate many good things about the young prince. He was known as loving, benevolent, and kind, a fair and just ruler. She admired him very much. The princess grew more and more to like human beings, and wish more and more to be able to wander about with those whose world seemed to be so different than her own. They could fly over the sea in ships and mount the high hills, which were far above the clouds. There was so much that she wished to know, but there was one thing, one very special thing that she thought about very often. Something she wanted to know most of all. Did the prince ever think about her? And one day, the princess finally got her answer. On one of her visits to the land, she saw a statue being raised on the beach. The prince had commissioned it and placed it upon the sand. It seemed to be made of the same white, smooth marble that made her precious statue down below the water. The princess couldn't see it clearly because of all of the villagers crowding around it, remarking at its beauty. It was a long time before all the people had their fill of this new work of art. Finally, when the clouds departed, the little mermaid was able to see the prince standing next to the statue. The princess gasped in delight. The statue of marble was in the shape of a girl who looked much like herself, with a strong, powerful fishtail, adorned with 8 gleaming pearls. Now the little mermaid knew that her connection to the prince was just as strong as his to her. And so, satisfied that her love was returned, she dove into the water, twirling and swirling with glee, all the way down into the deep blue. She confided in her sisters the news of the prince, his statue, and his love. They talked long into the night, happy for their youngest sister princess. One day, very soon, the little mermaid knew she would meet the prince and gaze into his eyes for the first time. But after an exciting day, she was very tired and in need of rest. So she found her way to her chamber, curled up for the night, and drifted off to a wondrous sleep.